Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ Volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners. Care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello and welcome to Nature Now for the third week of September 2018. I'm your host, Megan Silva. Today, I am excited to share the second part of a show on plastics in the ocean. Since the subject of plastic is becoming more relevant and a growing issue, it is worth the length of two episodes and possibly more. Our featured guest is Janine Bior, Executive Director of the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. The host for the interview portion of this program is Nan Evans. I will be sharing observations, news, and events. Before we continue our topic of conversation, let's hear this week's mystery sound and go through recent observations and news. This call is a series of 7 to 12 mellow mooing notes used to add in the location of mates in a colony. This species of bird's habitat is entirely along coastlines and open seas of the North Pacific. It is the only member within its genus. Mariners who spend overnight trips on the water may find this call to be familiar, since it's primarily made at night. Try not to confuse them with other similar lurking species. What a beautiful week of weather we've had here in the Olympic Peninsula. I can feel the season change as the alder and maple leaves are starting to fall and change color. It's been nice having rainfall during the night so we can get things done during the daytime with a glimpse of the sun shining. I don't know if anyone else saw these beautiful creatures, but I saw a pod of orcas at the Wooden Boat Festival while on longboats. It was such a gift to see their huge dorsal fins coming out of the water. Many patrons saw the baby jump out of the water before they all swam down and away. These orcas could have been residents following the salmon run or transients looking for marine mammals. In orca populations, knowledge is passed down to younger individuals from their elders. What to eat and where to find it, how to catch it, who to avoid, vocalizations and calls unique to pods and family groups, and the distinct accent of the population. Having multiple prey items to choose from probably led to the niche specializations we see today. Millions of years ago, different groups started eating different things to avoid competing for the same resource. Now these groups are genetically different in addition to their unique appearance and cultures. Nan had a very interesting observation while she was in Port Renvue, Vancouver Island. On a hike in the Botanical Beach Provincial Park, she spotted the palest banana slug she had ever seen. It was almost white with just tinges of yellow on its mantle and no spots at all. Sounds like she found an albino slug or a certain rare variation. I found some intriguing info that may help understand the mystery from the University of Victoria Starzomski Lab. Studies of Pacific banana slugs on islands have shown a correlation between slug spotting and island size and vegetation cover. Smaller islands and those with less vegetation cover tend to have slugs with less spotting and more homogeneous coloring. Larger islands and those with more cover tend to have slugs with more spotting as well as more variation in spotting. Coloration may also vary with diet and moisture level. 52 volunteers recovered almost 200 pounds of debris on beaches including Fort Flagler, Fort Warden, North Beach, downtown Port Townsend, Point Hudson Marina, and Chetsumoka Park. The cleanup was organized by the Marine Science Center and took place on September 16th. The group volunteering included an entire troop of Girl Scouts, 15 kids between ages 7 and 16, and adults from all over the local area. The most interesting thing recovered was the bottom half of a lawnmower. It was encouraged to focus on the smaller, often overlooked pieces that wash up on our marine shore. Speaking of Nan, here's her interview with Janine Bior.
So I'm back with Janine Bior again. Janine is the executive director of the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. Welcome, Janine.
Hi, Nan. Thanks so much for having me back.
So we're going to be talking about plastics again. You know what? You sort of read articles about plastics in the oceans, one gets a little overwhelmed. And I was at the dentist not too long ago, and lying right there in his lobby area was a June 2018 article National Geographic.
Excellent.
Completely devoted to plastics that had some just mind-boggling information. And so let's chat a bit about plastics.
Yes.
Where do they come from and where are they going?
I think one of the things, one of the barriers for solutions is that we demonize plastics, when actually plastics have provided an innumerable number of solutions for human beings over the last 100 years. It was discovered or created maybe 110 years ago or so.
But production really didn't take off till after World War II.
Yeah. And then it just skyrocketed, and we were finding solutions for all kinds of things and became this disposable economy, if you will. And so part of what's great about plastics is actually created this problem. One is that it is non-biodegradable. It doesn't decompose.
Which is wonderful on one hand and creates problems on the other.
On the scale that we're talking about 18 billion pounds of plastic every year being put into the oceans, it's overwhelming. And that it's inexpensive to create. It's economically inexpensive. It's very expensive environmentally, but economically, it's almost a free good.
And it's ubiquitous everywhere in huge quantities.
Well, just I was thinking this morning preparing for the interview, and I was asking myself, how many pieces of plastic have I touched? And it's only 8 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And I counted 72.
Wow. You know, you talked about just counting the number of bits of plastic you touch. And I think the plastic that we see everywhere in food packaging and plastic water bottles drive me just a tad nuts.
Indeed.
I saw a statement, I think it was in that National Geographic article, that more than 40% of the plastics produced is used just once.
Right. So just it's in packaging.
In packaging. And so it's just disposable.
And yeah, and we're touching it for, I think the we were talking earlier about, for less than 15 seconds. And then it's gone.
Yeah, just to unwrap your whatevers. And
so when you think about what I was thinking about my experience this morning of the 70 plus touches to plastic by 8 o'clock, then you multiply that by the 7 billion other people on the planet. Mm-hmm. And it's no
gigantic
surprise that we have this issue that we have to solve. But I think it really is solvable. I think of Martin Luther King's words, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. And our first step in the case of plastics is really to prevent more plastic getting into the oceans.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big step, not to be diminished.
It is.
How huge an Earth effort is. That is.
And that the corollary to that is to understand what we've got right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Port Townsend Marine Science Center has done a couple of studies.
Oh, tell me about, because mine kind of goes a little wirely once it gets global. But let's talk sort of more locally, so things that are tangible. What has the Marine Science Center been up to in the world of plastics?
Actually, about 10 years ago, there were two associated studies. One was with thousands of citizen scientists all around Puget Sound that collected beach debris and categorized it methodically, very meticulously, according to a set of protocols, measured that beach debris over the course of 4 years. And so that was one study.
And the Marine Science Center was part of that one.
Marine Science Center actually led that.
Oh, cool.
And inspired that work all around the Salish Sea, all around the Puget Sound.
That's just phenomenal our little nonprofit Marine Science Center.
Exactly.
It's so proactive.
It It is. One of the things that attracted me to the Port Townsend Marine Science Center was this tiny nonprofit, Land's End, out here, asking great questions, doing extraordinary work, and leading change, and leading people to take action and band together in that collective action.
So we have a sort of point-in-time database of plastics and other trash, I assume, found on the beaches of Puget Sound.
Right. And there was another study that was done that was collecting the boluses of gulls.
So you have to define bolus.
Bolus is the, well, it, not to put too fine a point, it's the regurgitated diet, what gulls have swallowed and then thrown back
and
up,
can't,
basically.
Are not digesting or
they're
thrown back
digesting.
Up.
They're not digesting, exactly.
So they're little
they're, if you've ever seen an owl pellet, or
it's
this
like
is
that.
A strategy of a lot of different birds. Mm-hmm. But it's a packet of undigested stuff.
Okay. And so the Marine Science Center was involved in looking at seagull boluses.
Right, from Protection Island. Mm-hmm. Citizen Science went out and collected boluses from transects out on Protection Island in a given period over 4 years. And from those two studies, the most dramatic information that came was that 40% of the plastics that were found either on the beaches or in plastics were from plastic bags from our shopping excursions.
So those filmy plastic.
And had, so 40% of the plastics that were in the marine environment were derived from those filmy plastic bags. And it gives me real hope that study was cited in bag bans across Western Washington, expanding to all of Washington, and really all across the country. And so this little nonprofit at Land's End here in Port Townsend really took that first step on that staircase and inspired just a very powerful
wave.
That's
a really exciting observation about the power of citizen science.
Exactly.
That this information, once we have it, can be used to change policy.
And so never doubt that
people can make a difference.
Exactly.
That's
one individual inspiring another, inspiring another.
So I know the Marine Science Center was really an active participant in the recent international coastal cleanup that occurred in September. Tell me more about that.
We have been the local hub for that coastal cleanup for years and years and years. And what I'm really excited about this last year, this most recent coastal cleanup in September, we banded together with 16 small marine science centers ranging from the northern tip of Vancouver Island all the way down to Olympia, including Bellingham to Des Moines, a couple of organizations in Olympia, Harbor Wild Watch in Gig Harbor, all came
together.
Up into Canada. And have created a little friendly competition, if you will, of which organization has been able to get the most volunteers and collect the most trash. And this year we got a baseline. So in future years, we'll be looking at the percentage increase of these different communities.
So Janine, I'm really interested that the sort of notion of gathering together a number of small marine science centers and aquariums and museums as a way of taking effort on a very small local scale and going wider. Are there other kinds of collaborative efforts that are trying to work at scale?
I think that's a great term. Taking our local efforts to scale. So one of the things about working within a small marine science center in a small rural community is that there's so much more to be done than it's possible for the small staff and mm-hmm. volunteers. Mm-hmm. And so by joining together through this collaborative, so one of the organizations has taken on the production of flyers and is mentoring
Coastal
Cleanup was our very first
shared event.
So Harbor Wild Watch in Gig Harbor actually created the flyer and created a little tutorial for some of the organizations that aren't very well versed yet in social media in how to get the word out about that. And so it's effectively kind of collecting all of us into one big shared staff. We're going to be mm-hmm. doing trainings for volunteerism and for marketing, and it's really exciting. So when we're talking about these large issues like plastics, it really helps to know that you're not mm-hmm. in it alone. And not in it alone as an individual, but also
as an
organization, mm-hmm. and that through that,
or just as a small community,
exactly.
Yeah. So I want to end this second conversation with something we talked in more detail about on our first conversation, but I just want to bring it up again. When we think about beach cleanups or coastal cleanups, one measure is how much trash was removed, but briefly share what you think the larger impacts are.
I think everything that we do, every positive action we do, inspires other people. That inspiration of other people leads to more collective action, mm-hmm. working together, like we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. And when leaders, either elected officials or leaders of the private sector, see that large-scale action, like at this last coastal cleanup, 800,000 people collecting mm-hmm. 200 million pounds of trash. When you look at that kind of scale, our elected officials and private sector leaders sit up and take notice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can lead to meaningful...
making a difference. Yeah.
Meaningful difference in manufacturing standards, looking at more cradle-to-cradle approaches mm-hmm. to manufacturing standards, and looking at economic drivers that help to provide a more systemic solution to the disposable plastic economy that we've created.
And thank you for that sort of note of hopefulness. It's so easy to kind of go into a place of despair when you think about the scale of many issues, including plastic. But thank you for the hope.
Likewise.
All right. Thanks again, Janine. This has been great fun. And I hope you can come back and we'll talk about something else.
Indeed.
Okay.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's hear that mystery sound again. That sound came from the rhinoceros auklet, a medium-sized, stocky seabird. Auklets are dark gray, except for a white belly. Auklets deliver food to their nest, mostly during the nighttime. This interesting behavior may be an adaptation to keep gulls and other species from stealing food. Like its name suggests, both male and female rhinoceros auklets bear a white horn on the base of their orange bill. Its function is still unknown. This auklet can sometimes be confused with a similar-looking and more common pigeon guillemot. Guillemots boast a black body, clearly visible white wing patches, and orange feet. Thank you to the Cornell Ornithology Lab's Macaulay Library and allaboutbirds.com for sound recordings and descriptions. Upcoming events. Thursday night, September 27th to Friday, September 28th is the Dungeness River Festival at Railroad Bridge Park in Sequim. This is a free celebration and exploration for all ages of the Dungeness River and the wealth of resources, including clean water, salmon, history, recreation, and the beauty it brings to our community. There will be food, awesome exhibits, live music, and an outdoor movie screening of The Memory of Fish. Thursday night at 7 p.m., followed by a Q&A with producer Emma Jones. More information found at nosc.org or DungenousRiverCenter.org. On Saturday, October 6th, Admiralty Audubon Society will be having a bird in nature walk at Fort Flagler State Park. Meet at 9 a.m. at the boat ramp leading to the Northwest Spit. Boat ramp has a log across it, and it is just beyond the Beachcomber Cafe. A blue Ford F-150 will be there. They will walk the spit, then drive to the USGS Fisheries Lab to check the northeast corner of the park. Expect to complete the park by 11:30 a.m. For more information, contact trip leader John Comstock or check the Admiralty Audubon Society website. Also on Saturday, October 6th, help the Jefferson County Marine Resource Committee with one more Olympia oyster monitoring this year at a habitat enhancement project. They'll be out on the tide flats at low tide early on Saturday morning gathering baseline data. Directions and details will be sent to those who sign up. Check out their website for more info and how to sign up. On Sunday, October 14th at 3 p.m., there will be a lecture by Dr. Charles Erickson, professor of the School of Oceanography from the University of Washington. Charles Erickson has helped change the way the ocean is observed, from top to bottom and shore to shore. His research group invented the Sea Glider and Deep Glider underwater vehicles. Scarcely 6 feet long, these autonomous vehicles swim thousands of miles while taking the pulse of ocean circulation, its temperature, salinity, dissolved oxygen, currents, and biological properties. His lecture is called Swimming Through Swirls, Observing Ribbons and Rings of Ocean Circulation Autonomously. This presentation will be held at Fort Warden Chapel. Adult admission fee is nominal and will be waived for teachers and students. More info at ocean.washington.edu/story/deepgliders. Thank you, Nan, for having me on the show, and thank you for listening to another episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community we live in. Contact Nature Now hosts if you have comments, observations, or ideas. Email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at 12:05 p.m. on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ at 91.9 FM on Thursdays at 5:05 p.m. and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Thank you for listening.
This week's Nature Now was produced by Nan Evans, hosted by Megan Selva, and edited by Alex Henley.